Hi, my name is Ben Riga. I'm a platform advisor on the Windows Azure Platform Evangelism team. We've been meeting with some partners and customers this week in Building 20, doing a deep dive event. And I thought that the Channel 9 audience would love to see some of the interesting Windows Azure applications that we'll be showing at PDC this year. And so one of them is Kelly Blue Book. And I have with me Andy Lapine, who is a director of enterprise architecture. Did I get that right?
That's right.
And Andy, tell us a little bit about Kelly Blue Book and what
so
you guys do.
Kelly Blue Book is a provider of automotive information. Most people will know us by our website, kbb.com.
Right.
If you're in the automotive industry, you may be aware of our dealer products, our industry products geared towards financial, government, insurance type of institutions.
Right.
So we do serve both sides of the equation.
I know that I've used it when I was, last time I was shopping for a car, it was a while back, but the last time I was shopping for a car, it actually helped me to negotiate pricing. And I've actually, some of the things that you've shown me this week were really cool. Maybe, why don't we dive in and have a look at the actual website?
Okay.
And then we can talk about maybe the architecture behind that and what it is that you're doing to scale.
So, sure, yeah. Sure. So let's start out with the most exciting demo that we'll see this week at the deep dive, which is, okay. Here's our site running at our on-premise data center.
Right.
You can tell by it's www.kbb.com.
Right. kbb.com.
And
right.
Here is our website running in the cloud. And you can see that they are basically exactly the same.
Virtually identical.
Virtually identical.
So you actually have two data centers today. You have one in Las Vegas and one in Los Angeles. Is that what you were telling me?
Las Vegas and in Orange County.
In Orange County.
Orange County,
right.
California. Yeah. So close to Los Angeles.
So the Las Vegas one is the main data center.
Right.
And Orange County is
Orange County serves as our failover, plus it provides us additional capacity to handle spikes, any kind of performance problems. If, you know, too many servers go down in Las Vegas,
right,
we can bleed traffic over using our global traffic manager.
Right. So the idea with Azure, the benefit you're going to get from Azure is to help you in what area?
So what we looked at Azure for was actually to get rid of our failover data center,
right,
and use Azure as our failover and also use it for additional capacity.
So when you talk about spikes, what are we talking about? I think you were telling me, what is it, 13 million on average? It's about 13 million unique visitors?
Yeah, we get about 13 million unique visitors a month, but those people don't come to the website in a nice uniform manner,
yeah,
over the day, over, yeah, the course of the week.
Wouldn't that be
so
nice? Yeah.
We see big peaks, you know, on weekdays, we see big peaks 10 to 2 a.m. to p.m. compared to 10 p.m. to 2 a.m.
Right.
You know, we probably see roughly an 80% drop-off in traffic between peak and non-peak,
uh-huh,
during the day. So we see huge fluctuations, but in our on-premise data center, obviously, we're paying for space, we're paying for power, and we leave servers running up all day. We have no real way of scaling up and scaling down to handle the peaks,
oh, okay,
and valleys of our normal traffic.
So in the middle of the night, you can actually would take those machines that you're using in Windows Azure, give them back to Windows.
Right.
Because you're not using them. You don't need them.
Right.
You don't need to pay for them. You don't need to have them running. And then in the morning, before that peak starts at 10 a.m., you can spin them up again.
That's exactly right.
Now, I know you were telling me about the cache for clunkers. There's probably a big spike there as well.
Yeah, so things that come up that are, you know, nice, timely information, things like cache for clunkers, you, mm-hmm, know, we had our two record traffic months around the Cash for Clunkers program, just because we had a lot of people with interest in trading in old cars,
right,
especially those clunkers,
right,
and getting new cars,
right,
you know, we're known mainly for coming, getting used car pricing,
mm-hmm,
we also provide new car information, but that really led to a huge increase in traffic.
And so obviously having Windows Azure there would have helped you to manage that capacity.
Sure, so one, we didn't, you know, this was the first time a cache for clunkers has really come up.
Right.
Before this, you know, we have our normal seasonal fluctuations and our daily peaks and valleys, but
right,
there weren't very many big things that came to inject a lot of new traffic to the site like cache for clunkers.
So typically in your data center, how long does it take you to get a machine set up and running?
Right, and now, you know, we can speed it up depending on our vendor.
Right.
But it's really about 6 weeks.
So and 6 weeks to get a machine from the time you order it to the time it's
running? So from the time we order it, get it to the data center, rack it, network it, have the OS installed, deploy the app, put it into our build process,
right,
so that in our normal code deployment, it gets included in the code deployment,
right,
get it in the load balancer, get,
right,
it in, I can go on and on,
yeah,
but
yeah.
I won't.
Yeah, so I think we can beat that with Windows Azure, right? So what is it typically for you to provision a new if you're seeing an increase in activity, what would it take for you to provision?
Right. So without even exploring the commandlets that were just made available recently and, mm-hmm. and the, you know, the API to programmatically do it, just going through the portal, you know, it's 2-3 minutes.
Right. So from 6 weeks, you're
depending
down to
on
minutes.
Our, depending yeah. on our internet connection, right?
Right, 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 right. So one of the things you were showing me earlier was this this cool, obviously Kelly Blue Book is all about data, information.
Right.
And so there was this interesting data visualization. I thought you might want to show that.
Yeah, so we have a cool data visualization that is done in Silverlight that we launched about a year ago now.
So this is Perfect Car Finder.
So this is called the Perfect Car Finder Photo Edition. So we have a non-photo edition of Perfect Car Finder, right. as you might guess.
It's more textual, right?
What we did here was really make a nice visual search. So as you can see, we can select and deselect different criteria.
Wow. Yeah.
So we really wanted to highlight the visual nature of shopping for a car.
Uh-huh.
Which is, you know, to say that, hey, what's the first thing that you think about when you're looking at a new car?
Yeah.
You know, you probably think, hey, I like the way that car looks before you start thinking about, well, gee, what's the gas mileage? What's
right.
the, you know, what's the price? What options does it have? You really, you know, hey, what does the car look like? So we give people a very quick and easy way to zoom in, to scroll across a bunch of cars in a category. So in this case, they might want to just look at sedans.
So now you've filtered down to just sedans.
Right.
And
I can even
click on one of those.
You can even go further and say I want to get something that's nice and green.
Right.
And say and 33 so miles per gallon.
So you've got
to
it
50,
down to
so now I've got it down
under 20 cars.
To, you know, just a set of cars. I can click on one. I can see information about it. 29 to 45 depending on which engine and,
right.
and transmission and things like that.
And you can see different colors or
yep,
finishes.
You can also see different colors, you know, different available trims for that.
Right.
So
trim,
here's a coupe, here's a sedan, somewhere in here. They used to have a hatchback.
But so this is not really Azure related.
This was built just with Silverlight.
Silverlight 3.
This one that you see here is running in the cloud just the same as it's running in our data center. You can see kbb.cloudapp.net, and
wow.
I promise I didn't do a host file entry
yeah.
to pretend that
nobody would ever do that.
That I did that. I didn't do that, so right. you're actually seeing this running in the cloud.
So the performance there is really fast. And I mean, this is a deep zoom.
Deep zoom, right.
It's all deep zoom, and yet you're pulling in photos. The photos mm-hmm. are coming in from the site, or probably CDN.
Yeah, so these photos are coming in from our CDN.
Right.
So we got them nice out on the edge. It's
right.
already pseudo cloud enabled
right.
for that. So that
so
way,
no
we
matter
get,
where you are,
we get them delivered.
You're
down
primarily
the very
U.S.
Quickly.
U.S. and Canada, I guess. Right?
Just the United States.
Just
yeah,
U.S. Right?
Right.
So pricing is just U.S.
Right. Because you get into Canada, you get into Mexico. It seems like obvious places, but
right.
you'd be surprised that they have different names for the exact
sure.
same car.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure.
So we're really geared to the United States.
So the CDN allows anybody anywhere in the U.S. to have the same sort of performance that you have here.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Better performance than just hosting in a single data center, obviously.
Okay. All right. So this is pretty cool from a consumer perspective. This is great. I can understand why you're on Windows Azure. Let's dive in and have a look at what's going on under the covers.
Okay.
You obviously are running in your data center.
Sure.
And you're also running in the cloud. How do you manage that? So what do you do with the code? First of all, how hard was it for you to move from one to the other? And
right.
then what do you do that? How do you maintain that?
So aside from getting in very early in you know, CTPs and
right.
And such, we use the same code that we do on-premise and in the cloud, with one small exception that we have a different project for the website
mm-hmm.
in Azure than on-premises. But you can see here we have our Azure project, which is an ASP.NET MVC project.
Sure.
And you'll see
so this
that
is the on-premise project?
This is the Azure project.
Oh, okay.
So what you see is we have a bunch of link files.
Okay.
So these files, if you were to actually look at the properties, and I won't actually show you the path, but just link.
So those are linked to.
Yeah, they just link to files in
our on-premise project.
Right.
And so that means that you can reuse all of the same code that you're building for on-premise, just reuse it as is in the Azure.
That's exactly right. And you know, the nice thing is we can, within the solution, we can run the website locally in IIS, mm-hmm. you know, just on a regular developer box, mm-hmm. or we can run it in the Cloud Fabric, so we can quickly see, hey, we're expecting these two pages to stay exactly the same. Are they exactly the same? So that way, if we're ever unsure about how this is going to work in the cloud versus on-premise, we can really just run them both side by side.
The projects themselves are different because you're deploying to different locations, right? Mm-hmm. One is your data center, the other one you're deploying using the tooling in Visual Studio. So what are the differences and how what were your experiences? What were the lessons that you learned moving from KBB on-premise to KBB in Windows Azure and the platform?
Right, so the big experience that we had was dealing with virtual directories. We had to figure out how to get around the usage of virtual directories, mm-hmm. which we do on-premise. Mm-hmm. We did that by creating the new project.
Right.
So now we have a new project that just contains files from both the projects that host our on-premise website.
Uh-huh.
Everything works just fine. We've actually created, you know, if you scroll down and see, you see all of our config files, which actually aren't link files. In most cases, they could be.
Mm-hmm.
So in most cases, they're not different.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a few exceptions, webconfig, some of the system.web stuff. Since one project's ASP.NET MVC, one project is WebForms, we had to merge those two together, and we couldn't take one or the other. We had to take the best of both worlds.
Sure, sure.
Let's say. So
the config file we're looking at here, this is the
This is the Azure config file.
Right.
So this is actually not part of the web project, but part of the Azure project, which we have here. So this is where we define our Azure configuration.
Right.
Nice thing about putting things in the Azure configuration, obviously, is you can make changes without redeploying your whole app. So as we get more down the development path of Azure, what we'll do is we'll have most settings defined here rather than in our web config.
Right, right.
In the process of conversion, we decided that it was okay to have the pain of having to redeploy code when we needed to make a web config change. But as we get more comfortable, as we get more used to, you know, dealing with some of the differences with the cloud versus on-premise, you know, we'll have a good story to tell around this.
And you'll it'll be able to merge that.
Yeah, if we need to make a web config change live to production,
mm-hmm.
which let's say we don't do that. Then we'll be able to do that just the same as we would on our on-premise data center.
Right, right. Okay, so just how long did it take you to move from what you already had in on-premise to Azure, given that you had to make those changes to the project and manage those two different projects separately, just in ballpark?
So once we figured out the solution, once we figured out the path that we were going down, it was a couple of weeks of work to get it running, to get most of the bugs worked out. A lot of the time that we spent, not in that 2 weeks, a lot of the time we spent leading up to that was mm-hmm. really prototyping
mm-hmm.
different things in the cloud. You
so
know, obviously,
time.
Yeah, obviously it's fundamentally different than on-premise.
Right.
And, you know, most specifically, if you just look at this configuration file, what you mm-hmm. see is, you know, your Windows Azure storage.
Mm-hmm.
So we spent a lot of time prototyping what are ways that we can use Windows Azure storage to our advantage, and you know that advantage is
so
flexibility or performance or cost.
Right, and just as a comparison, how many lines of code are we talking about here?
I think we counted it up, 63,000 lines of code.
Okay. And that doesn't include the ASPX pages.
That's C# code, right. So that includes, you know, anything in code behind on the web form stuff.
So decent complexity. I mean, it's
Right.
It's not millions of lines of code, but it's not.
Right.
It's
so
we
rewrote this in .NET 3 years ago.
Right.
We launched it around 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So it's, you know, 3 years, I guess it depends who you ask, a fairly new code base.
Sure.
It started in .NET 2.0, so this isn't old ASP that was converted to .NET 1 that was converted to .NET 2. This started in 2.0, so, you know, 3 years ago was 2006. It's not that old. It's still pretty clean.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty clean.
Great.
It's 3 years old clean.
Now, Kelly Blue Book is, I mean, it is all about data, right? I mean, it's all about car values and so on. So where do you keep that data?
I know the answer. It's a leading question.
Right, exactly.
In our on-premise data center, it's obviously all in SQL Server.
Right.
Because that's what you do on-premise. If you have data, it goes into SQL Server.
Of course.
If you're a Microsoft shop, which we are.
Uh-huh.
In the cloud, you know, when we first kind of looked at Azure and what there's offering, mm-hmm. we were like, well, how would we do this?
Right.
And then, oh, how about SQL Azure?
Right.
And I don't think it was called SQL Azure when I first heard
right.
that.
Yeah, right.
But soon after, it was called SQL Azure.
Sure.
And it seems obvious.
You right.
know, okay, so, gee, what do I lose out by SQL Azure? And, you know, as it turned out, very little from our standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once again, the database that we use is about 3 years old. It's not something that was ported from SQL 7 in 2000 and have some weird quirks in it.
So as again, for comparison purposes, how big is your database? What are you storing there?
So the database is about 120 tables. It's, you know, 2.5 gig of data. We actually, for performance reasons, we don't take a lot of the data that we have internally mm-hmm. and publish it out to our publishing database.
Mm-hmm.
We do a lot of pre-calculating
right.
of stuff. Get it out there so that it performs, you know.
So the car value data is relatively static on a
It's relatively static on a weekly basis.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Because all the changes is going on behind the scenes.
I assume there's stored procs behind that.
Stored procs, yeah. I think we have about 70 stored procedures. You know, we had to change, I think, 4 stored procedures to get it to work in SQL Azure.
Moving from SQL Server to SQL Azure.
On-premise SQL Server to SQL Azure. 4 changes. They're fairly minor.
Data types and so on, did you have any issues there?
No, we don't do anything fancy. We use SQL Server as a mm-hmm. normal relational database. We mm-hmm. haven't really used or had a reason to use any of the, you know, kind of newer, more advanced features in SQL 2008.
So, sounds like you had a pretty easy time of migrating from SQL Server to SQL Azure.
We did, yeah.
So, same skill set, same data, same processes, it
same,
just works.
Same skill set, it just works, that's exactly right.
Can we have a look at the, maybe we should look at the portal, I don't know if you have that handy.
I don't, but I can get it handy.
Yeah, why don't we bring that up?
Okay.
And the reason I ask is I guess there's some features on the portal side that allow you to maintain the security around that SQL Azure. And one of the things you hear is, well, if I have this database, it's in the cloud, doesn't that mean anyone can query that database or
right.
either read or even worse, make changes or deletions?
Mm-hmm.
And so, right, so there's this firewall.
So we see these firewall settings,
right.
And let's ignore the fact that this is being used for development.
Sure, of course.
And that I have my house IP address in here, which
in
hopefully,
the Microsoft Building 20,
which hopefully changes now that the whole world gets to see my home IP address.
Right, we may have to pixelate this. right.
But so, you know, you can strip all these out. Obviously, if you're running a real production website, you want to have it pretty locked down.
Right.
So maybe just to Microsoft services.
Right.
I assume our DBAs are going to want to have some level of access into it.
Sure.
So, you know, Kelly Blue Book, our DBAs, Microsoft services, we'll have it pretty well locked down.
Right.
So anybody with an IP address can't just come in and get this now that you can see my server name on the screen as well.
Oh, sorry about that. We're going to change that.
That's okay. Don't worry. I'll kill it and create a new one.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, so we're running short on time. So the things that I think are the most interesting to me is how easy that application migration was for you and the fact that you're able to maintain two different deployments, although they're so similar that you can use one code base to do both.
Right.
And same thing on the database side.
Yeah, you know, like I said, once we got over the fact that we were dealing with early CTPs, things just got more and more stable as we went along, and especially with SQL Azure, because when we started this, it was really, really early.
Right.
Whereas Windows Azure had been out for a
right.
long period of time when we got started, was a lot more stable. Things got more stable, and, you know, the story just kind of emerged on, you know, how easy this was going to be. And I could just see if we started today instead of starting
right.
4 or 5 months ago when we did, it would have been a very straightforward thing.
Sure.
Would have been a pretty easy story.
Awesome. So happy ending.
I think so.
Excellent.
I think so. Hopefully my boss thinks so.
I guess that's the
important issue for me, right?
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, Andy, thanks very much for spending a few minutes with us and showing this pretty cool solution.
Thanks for having me.
All right, thank you.